Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. I'm trying to wrap my mind around several concepts today. Concepts that so many around me see as self-evident, but which seem like bizarre, made-up nonsense to me. Listen, and tell me if I'm crazy. Here are some of the things that so many see as self-evidently true, but which make me scratch my head and wonder. Why the Russia investigation is even a real thing. Why the Jews are an especially vulnerable and helpless group, so much in need of our protection. Why African and Middle Eastern and other third world migrants and supposed refugees, quote unquote, have nowhere else to go except the white world. And how the German National Socialists got a reputation for being the world's most evil government. First, the collusion with Russia accusations. Donald Trump, for whom I hold no brief, to put it mildly, is accused of having arranged or condoned meetings of his staff or people close to him with Russian diplomats or other government representatives during his recent presidential campaign. To me, that is like accusing him of wearing pants or eating cheese sandwiches. There's nothing there. I have this feeling that diplomats, like ambassadors and their subordinates, tend to have large numbers of meetings with political and business leaders in the countries to which they're assigned, especially when those individuals seem likely to become decision makers. Isn't that their job? Isn't that what our ambassadors do? Why, therefore, is it surprising or criminal that the Russian ambassador might talk to Donald Trump or members of his team before or after the election? Why wouldn't they be interested in finding out what Trump's team was like and what changes they were likely to make in U.S. policies? Who knows how many candidates in U.S. elections have gone to Israel and put on their skull caps to pay obeisance to Jewish power, and have spoken there with Jewish officials? A huge percentage, I'd expect. How many of our elected representatives, Democrat and Republican, are out and out vetted by Jewish donors and explicitly questioned on their proposed policies toward the state of Israel? And how many hundreds of millions in campaign funds are then handed out by those donors and by AIPAC, the biggest lobby and payoff gang in Washington, to those who pass the vetting? Talk about foreign interference in U.S. elections. Hell, those guys own the U.S. elections. Yet nobody's going to jail over that, and no one is even being investigated. Even suggesting that there should be such an investigation is enough to get you labeled an anti-Semite by the controlled media. And how many elections and outright revolutions have our diplomats and intelligence bad guys and secret teams interfered in throughout the world? Weren't Victoria Nuland, our Jewish Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, and Jeffrey Pyatt, the U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, caught right out in the open, giving out cookies and encouragement to coup plotters right in the middle of a revolution in Ukraine that succeeded in installing a Jewish government there? And weren't they, thanks to some excellent hackers who made their phone conversations public, also caught basically promising high positions in the new government and tons of U.S. taxpayer money to traitorous Ukrainian politicians for supporting the U.S. instigated coup? I think so. Talk about foreign influence in elections. And wasn't the U.S. the bully boy for Israel in using bombings, shootings, and outright murder, either directly using our armed forces or through rebel proxies, enforcing or attempting to force regime change on the people of Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and now Syria? Talk about foreign influence in elections. And hasn't the U.S. government been doing this kind of thing for 100 years or more? So why all the hullabaloo about a few routine conversations with Russian diplomats? I'll tell you why. It's because we are now a nation of men, not of laws. American revolutionary John Adams said we should be the opposite. A nation of laws, not of men, he said. Meaning that principle should rule, not the whims of leaders or politicians. But the proliferation of laws, beyond all reason or need, by corrupt legislators, has gotten to the point where not only has no man on earth ever read every law and regulation of the United States, but no man could do so even if he devoted his entire life to the effort. So, since no one can now know if he or anyone has or has not broken one of the innumerable statutes and rules that cram Walmart supercenter-sized law libraries to overflowing, law today, if it is enforced at all, can only be enforced selectively. Therefore, the real situation that obtains in the U.S. is this. Most people in America are unmolested if they pay and obey, do what they're told, and keep their heads down and their mouths shut. Those who keep on the right side of those in power can commit innumerable crimes, and law enforcement will look the other way and take no interest in their activities whatsoever, unless they become too notorious and there's a public outcry. But say the wrong things and make political enemies, and suddenly whole rooms full of nice, nasty, heartless Jewish lawyers and law clerks will be hiring detectives and paying snitches, many of them perjurers, to document everything you allegedly do or say, and everyone you know, and every dime you make, and poring over every statute and regulation ever written for as long as necessary to find out some way to get you. And get you, they probably will, no matter who you are, even if you are the President of the United States. That explains the current Russia mania. If it weren't Russia, it would be something else. Like I said, I am not a fan of the Donald, but I have to say that there's something truly obscene about these politicians who take Adelson money and AIPAC money, standing up and sanctimoniously proclaiming that a conversation with a Russian diplomat is some kind of criminal meddling in U.S. politics. And there's something appallingly stupid about people who can't see or grasp that obscenity. So tell me, is that the way it really is or not? Am I right or am I crazy? That brings me to the second concept that just on the face of it makes no sense at all to me. The idea that the Jews, the ones I just mentioned who own the Congress and Senate of the United States, are somehow extremely weak and vulnerable and in need of special sympathy and protection and even money from the hard-pressed working people of the United States. We pay them tens of billions every year in aid, forgiven loans, and outright gifts to the Jewish state. We just gave them $38 billion as a gift to fund their military killing machine, one of the most effective in the world. Every time a rabbi paints a swastika on his own synagogue and doesn't get caught, we pay huge and ever-increasing security bills for Jewish organizations and pressure groups. We fund international commissions whose sole purpose is to rout out, criminalize, and imprison those who criticize Jewish power. The Jews are so weak and vulnerable that they control a large stock of nuclear weapons that is simultaneously illegal and yet politically unmentionable and untouchable. They're so weak and vulnerable, they dominate our Ivy League universities, own and control all the major media of news and entertainment, absolutely dominate Wall Street and banking, including the master money spigot of them all, the Federal Reserve Bank. They are, in fact, the wealthiest and most powerful ethnic group on planet Earth. Yet we are commanded to regard them as the most long-suffering, persecuted, vulnerable, and endangered human group, deserving of special protection and consideration at every turn, in need of constant help and aid just to ensure their bare existence. They're so weak and vulnerable that they need us to fight their wars for them, with our own sons and now even daughters dying in the process. The evidence that I've seen tells me that what we're commanded to believe about them is actually the reverse of the truth. So tell me, is that the way it is or not? Am I right or am I crazy? Another idea that is hard to accept is that brown or black people fleeing persecution or war or the consequences of their own dysfunctional cultures must always flee to white countries. Take a look at the map I'll include in the text version of this broadcast. You'll see just one African country alone, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, is just about the same size as all of Western Europe. And that's just one African country. Look at the vastnesses of sub-Saharan Africa and the Middle East. Include in the Middle East all of the Arab countries of North Africa. Look at the whole mass of mestizo nations south of the Rio Grande. A whole continent and a half. Add these areas up. They are huge areas. They dwarf the United States. They dwarf Australia. They dwarf Europe. Yet somehow we are to believe that these invaders of the white world have nowhere else to go. And they are sweeping into our nations like locusts by the millions and going practically nowhere else. It sounds to me like these brown people, however real their problems may be, are being used as weapons to bring chaos, miscegenation, violence, crime, and cultural destruction to the white nations of the earth. So tell me, is that the way it really is or not? Am I right or am I crazy? Another thing we are told that makes little sense to me is that the one nation that really put up a fight against the same destruction we are now facing, National Socialist Germany, was, quote, the most evil nation on earth, unquote, led by, quote, the most evil man who ever lived, close quote, and that these evil people, for no good reason whatsoever, decided to exterminate all the Jews they could lay their hands on using a pesticide that was designed to kill lice. This seems odd, because just a few years before this was supposed to have occurred, Germany had developed the infamous nerve gas, sarin, which is 26 times more effective than the insecticide designed to kill lice, Zyklon B, which they are accused of using. They had, in fact, manufactured a large quantity of sarin and even experimented with placing it in projectiles. But the Germans made a conscious decision, perhaps influenced by Adolf Hitler's own suffering from mustard gas in World War I and his belief that it would be inhumane, a decision not to use sarin or any other nerve agent on any enemy whatsoever, even though they were locked in a struggle for their nation's very existence, and even though their scientists had developed several such nerve agents. Under those circumstances, how likely is it that they would use a bug bomb to murder millions of people in a vast and resource and transportation intensive industrial killing program? There are so many levels of unlikelihood here. Why such a program at all when they had already refused to use certain deadly weapons on their sworn and deadly enemies, weapons of which only they had knowledge, on grounds of inhumanity? And when they even allowed part Jews to serve in the German officer corps. And assuming they really did want to kill millions, why transport the alleged victims to a hodgepodge of camps hundreds of miles away when a bullet on the spot would do? Why use poison gas at all? And if you are going to use poison gas, why not use the most effective one, the one that takes micrograms instead of milligrams to kill? Why use a bug bomb? The subject of the alleged Holocaust is a vast one and has been the subject of many thick volumes. But even the basic questions that would occur to any reasonable person given the initial facts lead to skepticism about the claims that in many countries it is a criminal offense to question. I am very, very skeptical of these claims. It seems to me that they are most likely a ploy to gain a special degree of sympathy and tolerance of aggressive predatory behavior for that richest and most powerful ethnic group I just mentioned. So tell me, is that the way it really is or not? Am I right or am I crazy? If you don't think I'm crazy, if you think I might be on to something here, something vital, something important, drop me a line and let's work together. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. The National Alliance is working to educate white men and women around the world as to the nature of the reality we must face and organizing our people to ensure our survival and advancement. To help us, send donations to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA, or visit natall.com/donate. That's natall.com/donate. To order books and CDs from National Alliance Books, visit natall.com/shop. And for free flyers to spread the truth in your community, visit natall.com/flyers. Once again, our postal address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes will rise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes will rise as we shout.